and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And it's Adio Alessio. 6 months in, fifth in the table, Kilmarnock have sacked their manager. If only he could have got them back into the top six, eh? What next for Killy though? Gary Holt? Ian Holloway? How about hapless Hamilton taking on hopeless Hearts this weekend? The bottom two desperately need a win, so it will probably be a draw. Rangers and Celtic both got decent looking draws in the Europa League. Will it be easy or will it be hard? Because we think it will be easy. Later on, we head to the Highlands to bond with the Brora boss. I'm Andrew Slavin, and we have to record this podcast quickly because JJ Bull of The Telegraph has a Star Wars screen to get to. Are you excited, JJ?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Are you?
Yeah.
Do you know I've seen it already?
Yes, and I'm not going to talk to you about it at all.
Well, don't worry. I'm not going to put spoilers in a Friday podcast if any listeners haven't seen it either. Also joining us, he's so well-travelled, he's so wise, he's the Yoda of this podcast. That's right, European football journalist Kieran Canning. Hello, Kieran.
Hello. I have no idea what that means. I've never watched Star Wars.
Unbelievable. That's why we're not friends.
Because you're magical and green.
And there's an extra voice in the podcast this week. The man who put Jim Leighton out to pasture. It's former Aberdeen goalkeeper David Preece. Are you a Star Wars fan, David?
I was when I was about 10. Yeah. I don't mind them at all.
You don't mind them?
I will watch the new one, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, of course will, yeah.
Have you seen the previous two of the new kind
I
of
have, yeah.
trilogy?
Yeah. I had to go on my own, though.
Oh, yeah?
Couldn't get anyone to go with me.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. It is really sad when you see a 42-year-old man go to the cinema by himself to watch Star Wars.
Trust me, I was there at 1 minute past midnight last night with my girlfriend. There was a lot of...
Ah, you've trumped me.
Yeah, I think I'm probably the biggest geek in the room. But hey-ho, let's talk about football.
Time to say
first Hibs, then Hearts, and now Kilmarnock. Yes, Killy became the third Premiership team to sack their manager this season, with Italian Angelo Alessio removed from his post after just 22 games in charge. 8 days before Christmas as well, so how could they do that? We're joined now by Barry Richmond from the Killy Trust. Barry, were you as surprised as the rest of us with this news?
More or less. I think it came as a bit of a shock to everybody, to be honest. We thought... You know, he was going to get the first transfer window and possibly beyond that, but apparently not.
Yeah, he got off to like the worst possible start, eliminated from the Europa League by part-timers Connors Key. Had the fans ever forgiven him for that start?
Well, I mean, he only had, what, 2 weeks of the transfer window or something before he came in, and to be quite honest, I think the players should have been able to walk through that game themselves with nobody at the helm. I think... They let us down as much as MD at that point. But, yeah, you're right. A lot of fans just never, ever forgave him. Mm. I mean, that was a long time to get there and not so long when we were in.
Do you think that first impression was really important to how his career's gone? Like, he came in with such credentials. Antonio Conte's assistant before and won titles in Italy and England. But are you disappointed with how the team looked under him? Do you think he got a fair go of it? Did you see any improvements?
Well, I mean, it wasn't that long he got, to be honest, but he did okay. I mean, we've seen him the team at times playing really well. We had 15 minutes against Hearts a few games ago there that was, you know, some of the best football we've seen, even when Steve Clarke was here. The comeback against Hibs looked well. Alessio wins manager of the month. To be fair, we've never really looked like scoring goals, though. That, you know, there's no real creativity there. It's not been very exciting to watch for the fans, so I don't think any of these... You know, overly surprised at what's happened.
Do you think the players gave him enough of a chance? Because the sort of rumours that have come out in the past few days have been that although results over the past few weeks haven't been great, and you're still fifth in the league, but maybe the players had already turned against him.
I've read all the same stuff myself about these player revolts and everything like that kind of stuff. I'll be quite honest. There's a lot of the players that weren't happy with the training, and some of the players weren't happy, and maybe the manager himself and all that kind of stuff. But I think they're a wee bit too professional to start downing tools, etc. And they were playing for their own pride as much as anything else. And we've seen that in the past few weeks. I think the talks of the revolt and all that kind of stuff is just people making up stories. Mm. I've spoke to a few people about the situation, obviously. I think it's been a culmination of things. The communication problems, the fact that a few players were unhappy. I think based on his record up to now, which on paper seems no bad actually, although the last eight games haven't been up too much, this is more about what we've seen coming. I think the Kamarnock board are being proactive here. There's another transfer window coming, and it didn't look as if we were going to be bringing in all the players that people thought we were going to be bringing in. And with us having James Fowler in there now as the new football operations guru, I think he's the look at the situation. And part of his remit is recruitment, etc. And I'm pretty sure he's got a big list of names, etc. And I think he's been part of that decision-making process. And it didn't, it's more about what's going to come here. Do we leave it a couple of months and then lose another transfer window and be going nowhere, or do we just call a halt now? And we've got previous for struggling and letting people go on too long before, so I think maybe Alessio has been a victim of what's gone before.
Barry, do you not think bringing somebody in with his credentials, with the background that he's got and his experience, that this should have been a long-term project? Obviously, any problems that have come out with about the communication and things like that, do you not think that could have been ironed out and that would have just improved in the future?
Well, I interviewed him a couple of weeks before he was here, and it was very difficult to understand, even sitting in a relaxed atmosphere and not in the heat of a match or anything like that, or at training. And we spoke to him again last Wednesday, and to be honest, it didn't sound any better to me, despite what he says. And I think, and nobody's xenophobic here or anything when I say this, he told us he was learning English when he went home, after training, watching Neighbours. So, look... You know the amount of drama there is in Neighbours, so I'm wondering if that's where some of the stories are coming from.
Maybe the players just didn't like them calling them Cobber all the time.
Aye, good day there, mate. I don't think it was helping them that much. The communication, it's very important on a match day and at training and stuff like that. Maybe that's why some of the players were upset, because they weren't understanding everything they were saying all the time. In the main, it wasn't really about that. That was just part of it. As I say, it was a combination of stuff.
I've read as well that Alex Dyer maybe never got as much input as he did under Steve Clarke as well, to do with training. Would Dyer be your first choice to come in to take the job now, or is there anyone else you'd like to see in the job?
Oh, that's quite a difficult one. Yeah. I think the situation we're in, we're just going to have to play it by ear, basically. It's pointless bringing somebody in straight away unless they're already in touch with somebody who made it through the interview stage before. I'm not really sure. I'm quite happy for Alec Dyer to have a shot. He's been there. He didn't want to do it before. He says he's not going to put in for the job again now. But if they approach him... So we've got three games here coming up that are quite difficult games. Motherwell's one of the best teams in the league at the moment. They are who we were last year. I think if he does well against them, but nobody's expecting him at Ibrox. But if he does okay against St Mirren and Motherwell, then I think they might actually go to him and offer him the job.
Alex Dyer, he's in temporary charge for the visit of Motherwell on Saturday. Do you think if he gets a good start, he could be offered the job? Because, like Barry said, he's not putting his name in the hat for it. But if he gets a good feeling for it, he gets offered it, he said he would consider it.
Maybe, but he wants to be an assistant, doesn't he? I think it sounds he likes doing that stuff behind the scenes. I don't know. I mean, David might be better to answer this one. I've read before as well that players often are closer to the assistant manager than the manager, because they're the pallier one, if that makes sense.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if there'd be a change in how he would then have to approach that squad if he goes from assistant to manager.
I think under Alessio that he should have played a more important part. We had a similar situation at Aberdeen with Ebb Skovdal, and it was Garner Spears who was his number two, and also Tommy Moller-Nielsen as well. When the communication isn't great like that, and his grasp of English isn't great, then it's more important that they should lean on them a little bit more to make sure that they know exactly what's wanted from the manager, so that then they can translate it and they can have an influence. But I think that it depends whether he wants the job or not.
Well, exactly.
And I think the biggest thing we've been speaking about this all this week, when I've been talking about different people going in Arsenal, maybe Ljungberg and Arteta, literally it's not about tactics or what they're going to implement on the training field. Sometimes, or a lot of times, it's about personality. And that's the first sort of, when we talk about communication, that's the first thing you get from a manager. And whether they're really stern, whether they're very, you know, really amiable, and that people are going to warm to them or be fearful of them. You know, the first impact is their personality, and I think that's, you can take a lot from that in the first sort of couple of training sessions, even the first meeting that the players have with the manager. That can go a long way to how they're going to be successful or not.
Is that why maybe the name that's been bandied around quite early on is Gary Holt at Livingston, who took charge of Livingston last August?
He knows the club.
It's that idea of, you know, making an impact and having that rapport with players and who understands this level of football too.
There is that, but also they've got James Fowler now as director of football, and obviously I'm no doubt that he's had a lot of influence in this decision as well, but there's a lot of pressure on him and a lot of responsibility on him to be able to see which direction the club's going and what's the right fit for the club. It does not necessarily mean that, you know, Gary Holt is because he's an ex-Killy player and that he's doing a good job at Livingston now. That doesn't really mean he's going to be good here. I think, you know, looking at the clubs, them and Hamilton, who've got their 3G pitches, mm-hmm. I think that plays a lot into how those teams play. And you have to get managers who, it's so important when they've got that advantage that they take advantage of it and mm-hmm. they win the home games. Killy did have a decent home record, I think, didn't they?
Yeah. But they've still got the third best defence this season.
Yeah.
Still fifth, and yet this is all happening.
Exactly, and I think that when you're looking at that, when you think that they've got that as a home pitch, then look at people who've got experience of managing on that as well. So whether that could be Scandinavian, Norwegian or Swedish managers, or managers who've managed over there, that could be a big factor.
Well, Gary Holt has experience of that himself. Livingston, and was a former teammate of Fowler's at Kilmarnock as well, mm-hmm. so I dare say they've got some sort of relationship.
So they've hired James Fowler basically just because someone doesn't want to say that Alessio was sacked, that it's your job, James, on you go.
Yeah, a lot of people have came out and wondered, because Billy Bowie, the chairman of the club who's not been there for too long, has kind of galvanised the match day experience for Kilmarnock fans, and there's been a lot of positivity around the club since he's came in. But Steve Clark was a great start, and it was never going to be easy to follow Steve Clark because he's such a good manager.
He's a very good manager. Also, the thing with Killy, it's really important the players they lost. As soon as they lost Greg Stewart, that changed the way that Eamon Brophy was scoring, changed the way they could attack. Then they lost Jordan Jones as well in the summer. So instantly they are less of a threat in the counter, which is how they play. Mm-hmm. So Clark had them set up all, you know, sitting deep in two rows of four and then hitting on the wide areas and getting the ball into the box. That was working really well, and that's, unless he's not done much different, to be honest. I know.
Yeah, even Malimbo, the sort of two loan spells they had with him, he was a big player for them.
Just because Steve Clark had a good season last year, and he had a very good season, obviously, it doesn't mean that he would have been successful this year, and there would have been a lot of pressure on him to see whether he could have repeated this season.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's played his cards really well.
And I do think that the whole language barrier has been an issue, because he got rid of quite a lot of Steve Clark's backroom staff. Although Alex Dyer was retained, you know, Massimo Donati came in, who's obviously ex-Celtic, AC Milan, played for Hamilton. He knows this type of football. And I think he brought in a new goalkeeping coach as well from Lazio. So there was a whole new kind of aura around the club at the time, and it just clearly hasn't worked.
It sounds like the players didn't enjoy the training sessions either. And you think someone who worked with Conte would have really quick, sharp, really organised...
Conte is known for being... I mean, if you look at Conte's career as well, he doesn't tend to last very long at clubs because he falls out with people quite easily. And a lot of that is like how demanding he is. Just one final point in the Italian way. There's a great Italian saying for managers to get sacked at this time of year that they don't get to eat the panettone. So no panettone for Alessio.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
The Premiership weekend kicks off tonight with Rangers travelling to Easter Road to face Hibs. Rangers drew Braga in the last 32 of the Europa League. Braga are ninth in the Primeira Liga in Portugal, but did come top of the Europa League group, finishing above Wolves. What do we reckon about this draw?
It's a hard one to judge, because if you look at Braga's league performances versus their Europa League performances, there's a massive difference. I mean, if you look at it, for example, how many points they are behind Porto, mm-hmm. who were in Rangers' group, and Rangers did very well against the two games, beating them at home and drew away, you would say this is a great draw. But then you look at those two games against Wolves, winning away, 3-3 draw at home. I think only Sevilla got more points in the group stages. So they're a team that are clearly well set up to play a European tie. They're also going to absolutely throw everything into the, this is their season now. They're not going to qualify for the Champions League domestically. So come February, that's going to be their sole focus, which I think does make them quite dangerous. the fact they'll have the second leg at home as well makes it quite tricky. But I think it definitely could have been worse for Rangers given that they were the unseeded team in the draw.
It would be a scalp for Braga to beat Rangers, would it not? Because of Rangers' European pedigree. Not of recent times.
Well, I mean, Braga have been in a European final more recently than Rangers. They got to the Europa League final when they played Porto a couple of years ago now. The final was in Dublin. But although they're maybe not one of the more stellar names in European football, they have been in European football competition for quite a number of seasons now and have got a fair amount of experience as well.
Also, Rangers have the top scoring player in the Europa League this season, who's not available tonight, Friday.
Yeah.
Because he got sent off.
For?
Not like him.
For celebrating with the fans.
So what do you make of this? So when Morella scored the second against Motherwell, he was obviously getting a lot of stick. And I'm looking at you, David. Obviously, being a goalkeeper, you would have got loads of stick all the time. And you can't exactly run away from it.
No. It's from me sitting behind him in a Markland stand.
Yeah. What's your thought on if, you know, you score a goal and then you give a little bit back to the fans? Do you think it's distasteful?
Should we call it the G-I-R-U-Y? Salute.
It's all right, get it right up you. Yeah. You can say that in the Totally Scottish Football Show.
But it must be frustrating, not just for Steven Gerrard, but for the rest of the squad. You know, he's so important to that team. Yeah. You've even seen in the, he missed a penalty in the League Cup final. But, you know, he's so important to them. And they must have thought, we've got it nailed now. We've sorted out this problem of petulance. I'm being countered by calling it petulance. And then he goes and does something like that when he knows he's booked. He's already got a yellow card. It's still unacceptable. He's still going to get at least a yellow card for that.
So you think he just should have been smarter? He's showing a little bit of, you know.
The worrying thing I would say for Rangers is that, and he has got a lot better at it this season, there's been moments of it creeping back in the past few weeks. In the League Cup final, when things were starting to go against him, he had a few challenges. I mean, he had one where he kind of raked down the back of Julian's leg, which, if the referee had seen it, could have been in trouble. So it's about, I mean, we often say with players like Morelos, they play on an edge, and if you take too much away from him, then he loses that sort of aggression and what makes him such a good player. But maybe this is just a timely reminder, particularly because he's going to be suspended for such a big game. And this is, given how dominant Celtic and Rangers have been throughout the course of the league season, this is one of those few games that you look at and go, it could be a tricky one away against the Hibs side, sort of revitalised a bit under Jack Ross. Friday night, game on TV, they're going to be up for it. And so to miss him for this game in particular is a really, really big one.
Do you know what I'll say about it? Do you know the reason why he is the way he is, or still is the way he is? His haircut.
Really?
Who has a parton almost down the middle, just to the left of the centre? It actually makes him look like a madman.
My God, it makes sense.
I think you've nailed it.
You
should have a good haircut in Scottish football.
I think he only got booked for that because it's Morelos. I think a lot of players wouldn't have been booked for that.
I think
everyone, you can't see this obviously because it's audio medium, but everyone's looking at me like, what are you talking about?
If the referee's seen it, he would definitely get booked for it. I mean, by the letter of the law, he could have got a straight red for it.
But how is it any worse than Vardy going to fans at Leicester and doing his ears?
But bear in mind, it's an automatic yellow card when you take your shirt off because you're supposed to be inciting the fans. So, you know, pumping your fist in the way that he did.
They should get rid of that. You should be allowed to remove your shirt.
Yeah, I agree. I think arguably what Morelos did was more insightful than taking your shirt off.
Oh, much more, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, the thing is, Rangers fans won't be too bothered. As important as he is, they still have Jermaine Defoe, who can lead the line for them tonight. He scored a hat-trick the last time these sides met, where Rangers actually won 6-1. David, I'll looking at you again because you know a little bit about Jack Ross, obviously, his time in Sunderland. It looks like Hibs have problems defensively, but they certainly look a lot better going forward since the couple of games he's had in charge.
Yeah, I know them both well, him and Paul Heckenbottom, and there's no getting away from it. Things have improved since Hickey left, and you only have to look at what's happened at Sunderland now to realise that it wasn't the right decision to let Jack Ross go. You can see that it was a wrong decision to bring Phil Parkinson in, but at least with Jack Ross there was the method was there. You know, the players probably weren't carrying out to exactly the way that he wanted to, but you could see exactly what they were trying to do, whereas now that the he's left it, it's just there's no pattern of play whatsoever. You see, when Jack's been interviewed, you know, he's studious, he's well spoken. You can see that how he thinks about the game. He's got a lot of time for journalists, and he's quite happy to sit and talk things through, no matter how much detail that they want to go into. He's quite happy to do that, and I think that it says a lot about him. And just because he's a nice guy doesn't mean that he's going to be a good manager. But like I said, you know, the fact that what's happened to Sunderland since he's gone, and the fact there's been an uprising there in Hibs' performances and results, it tells you everything about it. And I think given time, he's a young manager, and like I said, he's very intelligent, and he needs to be given time to... He probably hasn't got his philosophy nailed down yet and the way that he wants to do things, but I think given time, two or three seasons in the same place, that he will make progress every year.
I mean, Hibs are scoring a lot more goals now under Jack Ross. 8 in their last 3 home games as well since he became manager. And against decent opposition too, Motherwell, Kilmarnock and Aberdeen. What is the reason for that, JJ? Is it just a case of a bit more freedom, or the fact that Christian Doidge has just started scoring, which he never done under Paul Heckingbottom?
Heckingbottom had made some similar changes to what Ross has done now, and like he put Hallberg in at midfield and things like that, like those simple changes, because they were getting done through the middle of the pitch too often. But Ross has set them up. He's playing like a diamond in midfield. He's getting the best out of Scott Allen, but mm-hmm. that's again something that Heckingbottom is trying to do. It's sort of coincided with Martin Boyle coming back into the team, and I think that is actually probably the big reason, because he's clearly very, very good, really fast, was excellent against Aberdeen, kept quiet against Celtic by Frimpong, who's really decent.
Oh yeah. God, yeah.
I was going to say on Boyle coming back has been because the best players were quite samey before. We talked before about Scott Allen, Stevie Mallon, whereas Boyle adds that pace, maybe wasn't quite there before.
Just a different dynamic.
Yeah, it's a bit of a game changer. And also the thing that has changed, and even changed in the one game that Hibs had under sort of caretaker manager after Heckingbottom was sacked, is they've been playing Doidge and Canberra together, whereas it tended to be one or the other under Heckingbottom. And I think that's helped Doidge a lot, because Canberra's much more rounded footballer, I think, can drop in between the lines and create as well, whereas mm-hmm. Doidge is more just a focal point goal scorer.
I'm Jose Mourinho. I know a thing or two about being special. Football pundits who actually understand management, special. Winning the daily jackpot on Paddy Power games, not special.
Understood, Jose. Yes, someone wins an average £40,000 jackpot every single day. So if you win, don't think you're special. Daily jackpots by Paddy Power Games. Jackpots must be awarded by 11 p.m. and vary from day to day. Jackpot is shared with other operators. Available on selected games. T's and C's at paddypower.com. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker, and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Hudson Edouard surrounded by maroon shirts. He still manages to get the pass away for Christie. And Ryan Christie rifles in his 18th goal of the season, his 5 in his last 5. Back in the team, back among the goals, it's what he does.
Celtic were 2-0 winners at Hearts on Wednesday night. Could have been about 6 though. Did you guys watch this game?
I've watched the Black and White Scout yet.
Yeah.
This morning.
I mean, I have to admit, I think, I know we're going to talk about Celtic and Aberdeen, but I actually think Hearts were a lot better in the first 20 minutes. From what we've seen in previous weeks, they actually gave Celtic a few problems, but maybe that was just because of the heart and endeavour that they were probably asked to perform.
Problem with it was it was the energy they were putting into the game, and there's been a lot of talk of Stendhal coming in and wanting to play with this high press. But it also sort of exposed that Celtic, without doing very much, could open them up very easily. Like it could have been like 4-0 at half time with Celtic having done very little. Obviously, the goal from Christie was a good strike, but then they had two more great chances just after that, where it was just like a very simple one ball through the middle of the pitch, and Forrest and Edouard missed chances.
Well, Ryan Christie is up against his former club Aberdeen, also your former club, David.
It is, yes.
Yeah. Celtic 4-0 winners at Pittodrie just a couple of months ago. But Aberdeen moved back up to third with a win over Hamilton thanks to Sam Cosgrove's 19th goal of the season. Could he be in Celtic's radar? Because the likes of Lee Griffiths hasn't really kind of came back just properly yet. We saw the problems that Celtic had when they had to play Lewis Morgan in the League Cup final, had to put him at the top of their attack. So when Edouard's not fit, they don't really have a second or third strike option. I'm forgetting about Isuf Bio a little bit. Could Cosgrove be an option for Celtic?
I don't think Celtic are going to sign Sam Cosgrove, and they better not. I don't think they'd go for Cosgrove. He's I think he suits playing for a team like Aberdeen and possibly a team in the Championship. I don't know if he is. Maybe he would be great in a team like
thing
that.
Is, he's, proven, he's proven himself because last season
I really rate him really highly.
From Christmas time, he kicked on because nobody really thought highly of him.
But it depends on his price, and that's the thing. What Aberdeen was selling for, and your value is only determined by what someone's willing to pay. And I would imagine that even though he scored so many goals and he's really come on, and he's a proper all-round forward, he can do it all. He's a lot quicker than you think. I don't know how much Aberdeen can actually get from him, whether Celtic would rather spend that or go for. They've been linked with this. Who's the striker they've been linked with this week?
The Slovan Bratislava.
That's the one. Yeah. So I don't know anything about this guy at all, but that's more the sort of player that you'd associate Celtic getting. I think a technically able striker.
Two sort of strands to this. One, it could be difficult for Celtic because they've basically got to buy someone who's going to be happy to be second fiddle to Edward, who isn't going to play all the time, but is there in case he's injured or gets rotated or whatever. However, they probably also have to start already be thinking about what happens when Edward leaves, because I doubt he'll be there much beyond. I think he'll probably go in the summer. So they have to kind of succession plan and ideally get someone in now who's going to be there to play the qualifiers if Edward does go out.
Which is similar to what happened with Edward, came in on loan in January, I think, from PSG to support Moussa Dembele. But you've played Celtic before at Celtic Park. What's that like?
I've got a bit of a weird sort of past with Celtic Park. You know, obviously the first game 7-0 and not remembering any of it because of a concussion. But it's where you want to play. You know, it's a great arena, and I think that going into this game, you know, you think about just looking at about what all the Aberdeen fans have been talking about, especially when they, you know, you're going to games against Celtic and Rangers, and you want to see the teams compete. And I think there's probably one thing that's been levelled at Derek McInnes is that he hasn't been positive going into these games, and I think that's the key. If you're going to win at these places, you have to go after Celtic and Rangers, and you know you can be try and be really defensive and get away with a draw if you like. But fans don't want to see that. Fans want to go out and see that. And you know, if you get beat 2 or 3, then you know, hold your hands up. And I think that's it. It really is the key. It's mentality and the approach to the game rather than any way that you set up prior to the game. And it's one of the biggest things. Sort of the last two games I played there when we won at Celtic Park, it was Steve Patterson and Jimmy Calderwood, and it was a totally different approach that they took to Ebbsfleet. Ebbsfleet was, you know, it was very defensive. It was about you know, damage limitation or trying to nick a draw when we went with the other two, and you know, even with a young team with Steve Patterson and certainly with Jimmy Calderwood, it was just about getting after them and trying to win the game rather than damage limitation. I think that's where you've got to look at it. And sitting as an Aberdeen fan, that's exactly what I'd want to see as well, because the last game I watched live Aberdeen was Burnley last season, Burnley away in the UEFA Cup, and all game I just kept saying to myself that there was lots of room to play. You know, Burnley weren't a side comfortable being the team who had all the possession, so they were only comfortable when Aberdeen were going for the game late on, and then they could sort of counter-attack and go a little bit longer rather than have a lot of the ball. And I just think that, you know, that trusting themselves, they're a good side. They've got a good group of players there together, and I think that's, you know, that's the key to it. Trying to play a little bit more, especially in the open spaces of Celtic Park. Okay, they can punish you if you leave them yourself, but as long as you without the ball, you're disciplined and you get them back in very quickly, then why not have a go at them?
I mean, Celtic have been sensational at home this season, but can Aberdeen be positive going to Celtic Park?
It depends what you mean by positive, though. I mean, there's different ways of looking at it. Like, a lot of fans were unhappy with how some of McInnes' comments for the Rangers game, saying that, oh, they're better for us player to player. But I think that's part of management. He's trying to manage the way Rangers approach the game, because in the last few games, they've been fired up and absolutely done them. So you want to avoid that. You don't want to give your team, your opponent, any more motivation than you have. I agree with what David's saying, but I also think, like, I mean, McInnes has said that he thinks he's got it wrong before with the way he's approached Celtic Rangers getting caught up in it and trying to have a go and going for it. I mean, look at Hearts try and press high and get caught out with two mistakes through the middle, and then that's them done. So if you sit back I mean, people praise Steve Clarke for the way he approached games last season. It was pretty much the same thing as what McInnes does, is you try and hold your... Like, you block space, you make the pitch small, and you try and break when you can. And the problem is that Celtic are so much better that you have to get a bit of luck. Who's beaten them this year? I mean, it's Livy, right?
Yeah.
Who did exactly the same thing. A bit more of an aggressive, I would say, like a... I mean, they press them at midway. I don't think it's a high press, yeah, but they're...
And the vast majority of the game against 10 men as well, which made a big difference.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. I mean... It must be daunting going to Celtic Park, right? Were you more excited or kind of scared when you went there?
Oh, no, you get excited about it. You know, there's no better feeling. When I finished playing football, it wasn't the actual football that I missed. I missed the hour before the game. I missed the night before a game, you know, where you feel excited about going to the games, and that's what these games give you. And I think that it's not a, you know, say that this isn't a good Celtic side, because it is, but it's still not the Celtic side, and Rangers aren't the Rangers size of the past either. You know, so there's not the big names there to fear, even though they are good players. And about being positive, it's not about being gung-ho and attacking and getting full-backs forward, but it is about sort of putting pressure on them and not worrying about a mid-block and a mid-press. Go high on them and then make sure that Joe Lewis at the back, he's ready for the balls coming over the top, and it's not really Joe Lewis's style. But you can change it for one game so that you are high up, further up the pitch. So then if the ball does come through and you're coming out to take it, then it makes them think twice again about playing that ball again.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just about... It's about affecting them, and that's what it's about, really. It's not about, like I said, gung-ho or flying at tackles or anything like that. It's about making them think differently and try to change their thought rather than just being in a position where you're letting them do what they want to do.
And regardless of tactics, it's the players got to turn up. And I think the problem is a lot of these games, I don't think enough of the Aberdeen players have turned up in those big games. And I think all the instructions they will have worked on during the week, you don't see it in the opening 15, 20 minutes. And through stages of the game, I think it seemed to switch off a bit. There's no way I think McInnes is putting out a team to sit and try and let balls bounce off them where they sit back. He wants to get stuck in and try and cause them problems. But the big difficulty with playing against Celtic especially is that the only right way to play them is the one when you win. And that could be any number of different setups. Like, you go deep, you go up at them. Like, whatever he does, if he doesn't win, it's the wrong one.
We've also got David here. I was wondering, because the team that did really put them under pressure was Rangers a couple of weeks ago, when Forster was incredible. From a goalkeeping point of view, are you surprised at how well he's come back? Because the last few years at Southampton, he didn't look anywhere near the Forster of old.
No, I think it's been a great move for him, simply because it's familiar to him. He's had success here, so it all that comes back when he comes back to the club, you know, and it fills him with confidence. He's worked with Stevie Woods again, who's the goalkeeping coach there, who had a great relationship with. He's basically the one who built him up to get that move to Southampton in the first place. And of course, his crucial injury played a big part of that. I thought he actually did really well when he first came back from that. But obviously, there was the issues about him bulking up too much, and that led to him not being as mobile. He's not the most mobile in the world anyway, but bulking up a little bit, it seemed to affect him, and there was a lot of balls coming back off him. He's given up a lot of second opportunities to strikers when shots were coming in. And then off the back of that, your confidence is going to be affected. And then other players come in, and so it's probably the first time he really had to deal with that in his career, and it probably was a setback. But now you see him, you know, he's dealt with that now, he's put it in the past, and now he's having these performances again for Celtic, and he's probably going to end up being a better keeper because of it. And you're right, he was the reason why Celtic won last week, and not just because of the penalty miss.
Sticking with Celtic, they drew Copenhagen in the last 32 of the Europa League. Copenhagen will actually be well rested for this one. They've just gone into their winter break, and they won't play again until Valentine's Day, 6 days before the first leg in Denmark. You've played in Denmark, haven't you, David?
Yeah, I have, yeah. I've spent 4 years there, and funny enough that same manager stole us all back, and he was manager of Copenhagen at the time. So he's very much a Norwegian manager. 4-4-2, very disciplined, relies on a little bit of quality that they have. Always very strong physically sides, and these are no different. And there's nobody from that time there, but they're a talented side, but still a side that I think Celtic should be looking to beat. I remember when I don't know if you went to the game, the Copenhagen game, when they played Aberdeen in the Europa League.
Wasn't 4-0. I remember. I watched it in a pub, yeah.
That team, in my mind, that team was a better side than this side, and they went to Aberdeen and they got a shock of their lives with a full house at Pittodrie.
Jimmy Smith from about 40 yards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it was a brilliant performance by Aberdeen that night. But Yeah, I think it's still going to be a tough game for them. I know you're saying they'll be well rested, but I think it's a massive advantage for Celtic to have them then when they've had no competitive games over that time. Mm-hmm. They'll have gone on away to and had a training camp, a hot weather training camp, but still no substitute for competitive football.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven and JJ Bull.
The bottom two collide at New Douglas Park. It'll be nice for Hearts to play on a decent pitch for a change. Hamilton are without a win in 11 matches and have now slipped to the bottom of the table. Hearts endured their worst possible start under Daniel Stendel, losing 1-0 to bottom club St Johnston, who are now not bottom. JJ, what does that game rank in the games of football that you've watched this season?
It was awful.
Yeah, you text
it. It was terrible. I wanted to see what Stendel was all about, seeing what he put into this team. He set them up in a 4-4-2, and I don't think it doesn't matter what every told the players. Everyone, it's like if they're playing it on a PlayStation, it's like their finger was jammed on the square button. Just everyone hoofing it non-stop. Mm. I don't think the ball's on the ground for... Oh, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I don't think it was... There was no more than like three passes completed in one move until about the 35th minute, because I started counting at one point. God. Like, that's mental. Just shelling the ball, all of it was awful. About 37 minutes in, they seemed to calm down. Stendel was constantly on the touchline telling people what to do, as he was against Celtic. He's constantly talking to players all the time. He changed the system a little bit in the second half to 4-5-1. Doesn't really matter, but they were just awful. They were much better in the second half, Hearts. They actually played a bit of football, and you could see what they were maybe trying to do. And it looks like he wants to engage quite high, push the defensive line up a bit from where it was before, and just be a bit more aggressive, like really going. Everyone was chasing the ball.
It must be hard for him just coming straight into the season while it's in full swing, and he's just got to try and figure out who the best players he has available in the positions. Because I saw on Wednesday night when they played Celtic, although they were defensively shambolic, they even had Michael Smith playing in that kind of anchoring midfield role, and he's normally a right back. And when their actual right back Jamie Brandon got injured, he actually kept Michael Smith in a defensive midfield role rather than just moving him into his natural position, which seemed like it would have made perfect sense. But
Smith's a really good player, so put him in the midfield is really important against Celtic, who are a great team.
And he did a good job, actually.
I think I think Smith can honestly play anywhere across like the bottom of the midfield or across the back. He's just a very talented player. But the problem, like, I don't know, like, again, I want to ask David, because you've played professionally. Does it make a difference, do you think, when a new manager comes in, if they don't suddenly get the momentum of winning straight away? Did players maybe stop buying into it straight away? Does that ever happen?
Not really, but I think if you can see progression in the performances, then that's when they eventually buy into it. But I mean, Daniel Stendel said he did his homework on Hearts, and then after it was either first game or second game, saying, oh, it's worse than I thought it was going to be. So he didn't do that much research. But... it's Hearts is a similar. I was talking about Goodison Park earlier on today, and Tynecastle is a similar sort of scenario with it, the stands being so close to the pitch. It's a tight pitch, or it feels like a tight pitch anyway. So if you're going to play the high pressing football that he wants to play, it seems all set up for that. Especially if you're you're the home team. When you're playing on the pitch, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of space. And I know this might seem like it's just perception, but if you go somewhere like Celtic Park, It might be the same dimensions, but because of the vastness of the stadium, the pitch feels bigger as well. Mm. So when you're at Tynecastle, it does feel like there's not enough space to play. But so they have to play on that. Mm. They have to make sure that it doesn't matter who they're playing against. It doesn't matter if it's Celtic or Hamilton or whoever. They need to be able to push high on the pitch and just force people into mistakes. And then that in turn, it sort of gets the crowd behind them as well, because it looks positive. Mm-hmm, and it's not that I'm going all Duncan Ferguson here, like, you know what I mean? But it just makes sense to me at all.
Well, you could see that on Wednesday night, even in the first 20 minutes, when they were at Celtic's heels, just winning little niggly challenges. And okay, they didn't play the ball, but you could sense that the crowd were appreciating that kind of hard work and endeavour. But David, what do you think about the situation at Hearts with regards to the hierarchy? So, like, the owner and Budge revealed this week that Austin McPhee, the kind of caretaker manager before Stendel, and who was Craig Levein's assistant, Austin McPhee has been asked to work from home, and Craig Levein stays away in the mornings.
He does cross paths with Stendel, who says he's relaxed with the situation.
Yeah, it's just bizarre, isn't it?
McPhee's got a great reputation within the game as an analyst, a great analyser of the game. But also, when you're coming in afresh and things have been going the way they have, like they have at Hearts, then you want those fresh eyes to be fresh. You don't want to be influenced. And sometimes, a lot of time you can be influenced by people because you have chats in the coach's room, and if you're analysing games, you take on board people's opinions, and it's not always good to get that perspective because it sort of changes the way that you look at it and maybe softens down your beliefs and you sort of change the way they think as well. So it's probably the right idea, initially anyway, to make sure that Stendhal is doing the job that he wants to do and the way that he wants to do it.
But
we talked earlier on with the Kilmarnock situation, how important an assistant manager can be, the coaching staff can be. Mm-hmm. So Stendhal has been put in there on his own. He has two coaches that worked with him previously that he wants to bring with him that there doesn't appear to be the budget for at the moment. There's also the issue with the contractual situation with Barnsley. It almost just feels to me as if it's setting him up to fail from the start. That Anne Budge she's got a lot of praise in the past few years for how she's run the club and things, but it just seems to lack a bit of ruthlessness to... I know she's very attached to Craig Levine, as I'm saying that Austin McPhee has a great reputation in the game for parts of what he brings, but it just feels as if it needs a clear out to give that sort of fresh start and allow Stendhal to bring in his own coaching staff.
We've got three coaches in the books just now. You've got John Daly, Liam Fox and Paul Gallagher, so you'd have to pay them off and then...
Yeah.
I mean,
I think Austin McPhee's contract's up at the end of the season, but if you shouldn't be accommodating a director of football because they're the people that set the agenda. Mm-hmm. They're the people who everything else underneath them follows. And it's not like we talk about James Fowler having an influence and bringing people in and sacking people. Has Craig Levein had any input into Daniel Stendhal? Is he of the same mind and sort of have the same philosophy as Craig Levein? No, he doesn't. Mm. So it just seems like a bit of a botch job. We're going to throw this manager in here, and then becomes a flick of the coin because he hasn't got the people around him to be able to implement it fully.
Just one more thing, because Anne Budge also said at the time they got rid of Levein that they were going to bring in a new director, because Levein was doing two roles basically. They were going to bring a new director of football and a new manager, and they would get the director of football in first. Because with that, I mean, that to me makes much more sense. If you have director of football and you trust that person to be in charge of, I mean, recruitment on both the coaching side and the player side, academy structure, all that kind of stuff, and then within a couple of weeks they completely kiboshed that and said, right, now we're just going to get a manager in and sort of forget about the director of football to the time later on, which it just speaks to this sort of chaos that's going on, and it's not helping. The situation in the background is just clearly not helping the team on the park.
Well, regardless of what's going on in the background, this game is massive for both teams. Hamilton and Hearts have only won twice all season, so this is absolutely huge.
I think Hearts are going to win this. Hamilton are really struggling. Hearts are a better team. I've seen enough in that Celtic game from Hearts and the second half of this, well, bits of the St Johnstone defeat, that I think they'll be a lot better team than they have been.
Mm-hmm. But Hearts are missing a lot more players than Hamilton are. I know Hamilton's
players, though, don't they?
My thing with Hearts, though, is who's going to score goals for them at the moment? Because even in that Celtic game where they were a bit better, they didn't really threaten to score goals. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge number of the recent games where they haven't scored, and Mr. Johnson was the same. And with Naismith, again, out injured for the foreseeable future, Piezo wasn't fit for last night.
No Connor Washington either.
The other thing as well is that we were saying earlier, if Hearts are going all out and pressing really high with a high defensive line, Hamilton are exactly the kind of team that'll just launch over the top and they get chances, and they just need one.
Time now for the latest odds with our man Lee Price at Paddy Power. Lee, many in Scotland feel happy about the Europa League draw for Rangers and Celtic, but what are the odds of either of them going all of the way?
Well, unfortunately, our odds are less kind to the Glasgow clubs than the draw itself. We make Celtic joint eighth favourites alongside German team Leverkusen to win the Europa League at 25-1. Rangers, and don't at me for this one, I don't do the odds, they're 20th in our betting at 66-1 alongside last 32 opponents Braga and Olympiacos. We do make both Scottish sides favourite to progress though, with Rangers odds on to win their first leg at Ibrox, so there's something.
We've been speculating about this, but who will be the next Kilmarnock manager?
Yeah, Alex Dyer is the man interim charge, and Google tells me he probably should succeed Steve Clarke in the summer. although it would definitely be preferable to be the man following Angelo Alessio, wouldn't it? He's 6-4 to be made Kilibos on a permanent basis. Livingston manager and club legend Gary Holt is second favourite at 3-1. And then there's not many contenders beyond those two. To put that into context, Ali McCoist is 16-1 fourth favourite. There's no way he'd give up his mornings of Alan Brazil, surely.
Finally, if Hearts lose at Hamilton on Saturday, they will be bottom of the table. Is it going to happen?
No. In fact, we say it's odds on that Hearts can get their first win under Daniel Stendel. All of his motivational speech this week, you can see he needs that. It's 10-11 they win at Hamilton, with the hosts rated as 11-4 shot. The draw, which might simultaneously suit everybody and nobody, is 5-2.
We've seen some teams make their way from the Highland and Lowland League to the SPFL in the last few years and make an impact. Teams like Edinburgh City and Cove Rangers. Could Brora Rangers be next? We're joined now by player manager Stephen Mackay. Stephen, you're top of the table right now. What's the secret to your success at the moment?
I think it's all down to the players, to be honest with you. You know, last season we came second in the league behind Cove, which was obviously disappointing for us, but kind of gave us a little bit of hunger in terms of this season and what we wanted to achieve. So the boys have started the season relatively well, I think it's fair to say, but over the course of the last month or so, I think they've picked up in terms of the level of performance, which, like you said, sees us sitting top of the league, which is a great position for us to be in.
You've been a Highland League club since 1962, but you're actually celebrating your 140th anniversary this year. So how big would it be for the village for the club to be in the SPFL? I know it would be via the playoffs as well, but it must be huge.
Yeah, it would be massive for the club. Like you said, it's been established for a long time. And to be fair, in that period, it's not seen a huge amount of success. Probably only really latterly in the last 7 or 8 years have we seen some success. The club has had a local businessman that's invested quite heavily in the club with a view to try and get Brora into the Scottish League. So, to answer your question, it would be massive for the club, for the fans and for the players to try and get up into the Scottish League, and that's certainly our ambition.
Brora is pretty far north. Do you ever find it? Well, exactly. I mean, has that make it difficult for you to bring players in, like from the area, or attract anyone to, you know, from the Highlands or anywhere to come up and play for you?
Yeah, I mean, it is challenging. I think that's fair to say. Albeit, I mean, we are predominantly, although we, you know, our team plays for Brora, the majority of our squad is kind of based in Inverness, which opens up a catchment area for us. You know, I think it would be very unrealistic to expect us to be able to attract enough players and at the right quality just locally in Brora in the Sutherland area, albeit we have got a couple of players. So predominantly our squad's Inverness based. We actually train in Inverness, apart from pre-season when we actually train up in Brora. So that makes it a little bit easier for us, but it is difficult at times trying to convince guys to come and play football for us, considering we're an hour and 15 or an hour and a half north of Inverness, which is quite a distance to travel. So it does require an element of commitment from the boys, that's for sure.
I mean, we've got it written down here, you're 46 miles north of Ross County, but you say that you train in Inverness, that's 57 miles away. Do you think you've got the squad that can compete at a higher level? You know, you made it to the fifth round of the Scottish Cup 2 years ago, but Now, do you have a team that could make its way at the higher level?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, you touched on there, we had a great run in the Scottish Cup a few years ago, which gave us all a bit of a taster for it. And I think, you know, that squad alone probably could have competed in the Scottish League. However, I think that now the club and the squad that we've assembled, you know, I've never had as much confidence in a Brora team to go and compete in the Scottish League. You know, I think if you look at our squad and you know, it gives me a headache most weekends trying to pick my strongest 11, because I think we've got a squad of 16, 17 players that could all compete for a regular start. So I think the club's in good hands. I think the squad's as strong as it's ever been. And I think we've seen, you know, this season in terms of our performance a few weeks ago down at Morton with a 1-1 draw in the Scottish Cup, that the guys are at a level that could more than handle the Scottish League.
Everything in the Highland League, it just happened, we'll see it in the new year, Russell McMorran has resigned. He's the manager that was in the documentary.
Yeah.
It's really good, it's really fun. He's going to leave in 2020, so they need a new manager.
Is this the guy that stepped into the managerial role?
Yes.
After their manager in that documentary started? Was he not an ex-copper?
He was, yeah. He left because I think he had PTSD from working. But it's a difficult job managing the worst team in the world.
Well, at least he got, it was the first win in a very long time. I can't remember how long that actually was.
Aye.
But he'll leave with his head held high, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, no, for sure. And the other thing with Fort William, like, that sort of novelty, that comic value they've got. I mean, they've got 20,000 followers on Twitter, which is not worth money or anything, but they're selling merch, stuff like that. They might be better off than they certainly were by being worse than other teams.
That's the Scottish equivalent of like Arsenal fan TV, where they're making money off their team being terrible.
it's like their marketing angle. What if they start being good?
Well, Kieran pointed out, we weren't recording, but Kieran pointed out, they still have Brora to play.
They played Brora on the first day of the season and lost 6-0, but their second match against them was postponed, so they still have that joy to go through.
Oh boy.
I think whoever's going to be the next manager, their first priority is to make sure that they make their home stadium a fortress.
Very good. Hey. Very good. You've made your being here all the worthwhile with that. The Saints go marching in Perth as St Johnstone hosts St Mirren on Saturday. We sometimes like to think we know what to expect from the Premiership, but who could have imagined this scoreline? St Mirren 3, Livingston 3. What happened there? Have you seen that? I couldn't believe it when I saw it in the video printer.
Have you seen the goals, though? Utterly shambolic.
That's what we can expect from the Premiership.
One of the managers, I think it was Gary Holt, but it may have been Goodwin, but certainly one of the managers said that there was one good goal amongst the six, which when the managers are saying that about their own goals, you know, it wasn't a great spectacle. But it was also one of those days where it was just absolutely foul weather.
Yeah.
And it's not like the best stadium in terms of being protected because all the stands are quite low down. So it was one of those where free kicks were just going in and the ball was swirling round for about 5 minutes before it came down. So,
but this is all really good for St Mirren, because for most of the season they've really struggled for goals. They're now two games unbeaten and they've scored 4 goals in those 2 games. So that's more than a quarter of their goals in the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, Obika got 2 at the weekend, so he's up to 5 for the season, which is, you know, by a distance, St Mirren's best. It's going to be a struggle for St Mirren all season, but they're probably above, you know, where they expected to be. Well, certainly above where they expected to be because they're above Hearts, but they, I imagine, would have anticipated battling with Hamilton and probably Livingston to stay up. So they're ahead of schedule. And I was speaking to someone, a big St Mirren fan, who was up for the cup final a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about how they just need a striker, and they're looking at a various number of target men in January window, one of which apparently is Stephen Presley's son, who is at Aston Villa, I think he said, but yeah, he's looking for a loan move. They need a goal scorer in January.
So St Johnstone won at Hearts. It was their first away victory of the year. But one of the things that has been an issue for them this season is how young their defence is and how naive their defence seems to be. Have you ever struggled, David, when you've had a defence that is just kind of maybe...
I've watched him play behind one.
But do you know what I mean? Like, how much confidence do you get as a player when you just know your defence isn't really...
I mean,
experienced enough, perhaps.
In that case, if you're playing behind a young defence, you have to coach them, you know, at the end of the day, and you have to try and help them. I mean, one of the most neglected jobs of a goalkeeper these days, when you talk about sweeper keepers and everything, and the distribution, is the communication. Alisson's the perfect example that everybody we talked about this morning on the Totally Show, that everyone saw his distribution was world class. You know, he's a big, imposing figure on the pitch, really good shot stopper. But from all the people I spoke to at Liverpool, they said the first thing they noticed about him was his communication. And I think that's, as much as Virgil van Dijk has been a massive rock and a massive addition to stabilising their defence, he's been as important with his communication. And even when it, like I said before, about if it's up the other end of the pitch, you know, you have to organise the team so they don't get counted on as well, and make sure people are aware of what's going on in front of you, in and around them. So from that point of view, it's, yeah, if you're playing against inexperienced defences or bad defences, at the end of the day, you've got more to do, so you've got a better chance, more of a chance to shine.
I have not looked at Xander Clark to see how much he chats to folk.
Yeah.
I know he likes to pick the ball up and kick it as far away immediately as he can. But I think one of the things I noticed in that horrible Hearts of Johnston game was that I thought St Johnston's defence, or in defence, they just looked better organised. They really looked like they knew what they were doing. Clearly been very, like drilled specifically on that during that week or something on training, because every time the ball went to a certain place, everyone's in exactly the right position and worked really hard off the ball to win it back. That is the good thing that Johnston did, which is what they've been weak with, and they managed to get a lovely goal.
And finally, Livingston versus Ross County. Now, I just saw today, when we record this, there's actually huge doubt that this game will happen, because Ross County's players have reportedly all succumbed to norovirus. So at least 10 players are out with the bug, but there has not been a request to postpone the match as of yet, as we record this podcast.
I mean,
so who knows if this will even happen?
They definitely can't play if they have that. Let me tell you.
This happened at Aberdeen when I was there.
Really?
Yeah, I think, I can't remember whether it was Dundee United or Dundee we were supposed to play, and there's 14 of us.
Did you get it as well?
Yeah. It's the worst night I've ever had in my life.
Oh my God. Yeah. Is it really as bad as this is?
Because being sick into the toilet and pebble dashing the wall at the same time.
Oh my goodness.
But I think that was food poison, though. That was Roger, who was the cook or the chef at the time at the club. That's how we all got it.
I mean, if you're at Livingston, you don't really want to be welcoming Ross County to this.
On that plastic pitch.
I mean, I was going to spaghetti head. I was like,
the worst part about all of it was the next day, after you've had your episode, that you had to go to the club, and then you had to take, they give you this little pack that was given you by they send it away to a lab to test or something like that. So you actually get like this little box, a sheet of plastic. You put a sheet of plastic over the toilet and you have to do your business on that. And then
take number two.
And then take this is like this thing on like a spoon on the end of a handle, and then you like take that, and you've got to take a sample of you've done, and then put it into a bag, put it into a box, and then send it away to be tested.
The magic of sports science.
That was terrible. That was that bit of actually doing that bit. That was worse than the vomiting and the diarrhea.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
But if you've got this plastic sheet on top,
can we not talk about this bit too much?
Let's just, with that information, let's all just wish the Ross County players well.
The postponed. And I was devastated because there was about 6 or 7 of us out, and one of them was Peter Kerr, who was playing at the time, and I hadn't played for about a year or something like that, about 9 months. So I was in line to play, and then the night before the game, I got it, and then another six or seven of us got it, and they had to call it off.
Bloody hell, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible, yeah.
If this game does actually take place, you know, you'd like to think
it's 0-0.
Yeah, but you know, Livingston 4-0 winners at Dingwall back in August. 4-1 actually. But they were 3-1 up against St Mirren and still couldn't get the job done. So it does scream 0-0, doesn't it? All these goals flying in elsewhere, but not in this game. Big win for Ross County against Kilmarnock. Perhaps the final straw for the decision makers at Killie, perhaps. Lee Irwin in stoppage time. 2 wins in the spin, and Kettlewell and Ferguson, the co-managers, say the belief is back. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they went on a terrible run, but they had a good start, so they had a bit of breathing space in terms of the teams at the bottom of the table. But they're another team, I think, that are well ahead of schedule in terms of where they wanted to be first year back in the league, and given how poor, the likes of Hearts, St Mirren, Hamilton have been, St Johnston at the start of the season, they'll be confident of staying up, and getting those 2 wins, as I say, just brings that belief back, and they'll, presuming the game goes ahead, and if they have a full complement of players to choose from, I think barring this virus, they would have been quite confident going to Livingston this weekend, because Livingston are another team who started quite well and have tailed off quite badly in recent weeks.
Well, that's all we've got time for. Thanks to JJ, thanks to Kieran, and thanks to David as well for joining us. Also, thanks to Little Kicks for our cool theme tune. And we can never forget the super producer that is Charlie Jones. We'll be back next Friday. Oh, yes, we will. The day after Boxing Day, looking ahead to the last set of games before the winter break, including the big one. That's right, everyone. Lock your doors. It's the Dundee Derby. Oh, yeah, and also the Lanarkshire Derby as well, Motherwell v Hamilton. I don't think there's any other big rivalries that weekend. From all of us here on the Totally Scottish Football Show, have a Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.